Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. Everyone seated? Ready? Okay. Woohoo! Who's ready? It's 3 o'clock. Woo! Well, we are all so excited that you chose to join us today to talk about time-saving tips for women at all stages of life. In our time together today, we hope to spark some tangible actions for any of us who feel overwhelmed, stretched thin, exhausted, and unbalanced. Our goal is to help you uncomplicate and achieve the simpler, more intentional life we all desire. We'll touch on such concepts as how to boycott busy, get rid of excess, and create more with less, how to establish sanity back in your life with practical tips for managing the mental, emotional, and physical challenges of returning to work as a new parent, and practical tips for finding more time in your day, which I think we all would appreciate. So my name is Carrie Bucci, and I'm a professionally trained personal development coach and consultant here in Philadelphia. I work with companies to design and implement people-centric programs that attract, retain, and develop awesome talent. I also work with individuals in my private coaching practice who are ready to take steps to create the life they've always wanted, and I'm working on a book about work-life harmony and burnout resilience. I'm also the proud mom of 2 daughters, ages 20 and 18, which makes me an official empty nester. Yay! I did it! So do we have any Dolly Parton fans in here? Yes! So Dolly is one of my heroes, and I feel like she really got to the heart of what we're gonna talk about today when she said, "Don't get so busy making a living that you forget to make a life." I hear it all day long from my clients, from my friends, from strangers, from family, and from myself. I am so busy. We're a part of a culture that really places a lot of value on being busy. And being busy makes us feel productive and important. It can be a badge of honor. Who out there has thrown out what's known as the busy brag? I know I have. I am so busy. And it just perpetuates that really terrible feeling of stress, burnout, being overwhelmed, and ultimately feeling like we're not performing to our fullest potential in any area of our lives. At home, at work, in our community, with our friends, and then with ourselves. The cultural emphasis on busyness can mean that making a change or taking time for ourselves can make us feel guilty. And let's face it, most of us don't even know where to start. As far as I'm concerned, self-care isn't just about getting a massage or going on a vacation, although I'm a big advocate for both. It's about creating a life that feels sustainable and fulfilling. Being mindful about making decisions for yourself and your family that results in everyone being happier, healthier, and connected. Decisions that feed your heart, nourish your soul, and live into your personal values, whatever those may be. The average female full-time employee works 47 hours a week, longer than their counterparts in the world's largest economic nations. The United States has among the highest percentage of full-time working moms, and most of us return to work within 6 months of giving birth. That tells me there's an awful lot of us out there who are trying to navigate work-life harmony, keep our sanity, and figure out how to make it all work within the confines of the 1,440 minutes in a day. When we feel that our schedules are out of control, we feel our lives are out of control. When we focus our energy on making some changes in how we spend our time, we show up more organized, more focused, more confident, and happier. And like the old saying goes, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. Investing the effort in making some changes in how we structure our days makes a big difference to everyone in our lives, but it's easier said than done, right? I firmly believe that every decision we make throughout the day is either leading us towards or away from the life that we really want to live. Let's spend a little time today talking through some thoughts, attitudes, and tangible steps we can take that will get us moving in the right direction. So I'm very excited to introduce our incredible panelists for today. Lauren Smith Brody is the author of The Fifth Trimester, The Working Mom's Guide to Style, Sanity, and Big Success After Baby. She's the founder of the consulting firm The Fifth Trimester, which helps parents and businesses collaborate to create a more family-friendly workplace culture. The Fifth Trimester has been featured on Good Morning America, CNN.com, Fast Company, and dozens more outlets, and Brody has been a featured speaker at companies and organizations including Facebook, Fried Frank, The New York Times, Google, American Express, and more. Courtney Carver changed her life by simplifying it after a devastating diagnosis in 2006. She's the founder of BeMoreWithLess.com and Minimalist Fashion Challenge Project 333. In her new book, Soulful Simplicity, Carver shows us the power of simplicity to improve our health, build more meaningful relationships, and relieve stress in our professional and personal lives. K.J. Dell'Antonia edited the Motherlode column for the New York Times for 5 years. This experience taught her that family can be a source of joy, not stress. Her reporting and research on parental happiness led to her book, How to Be a Happier Parent: Raising a Family, Having a Life, and Loving Almost Every Minute. She writes regularly on the personal and policy aspects of parenthood for the New York Times and other publications, and sends out a weekly tiny letter on being a happier parent, even when she's not. So let's jump right into it. Ready for some questions?
Ready.
All right. Courtney, we're going to start with you. How can creating a morning routine help us feel less busy and eventually become less busy?
My go-to morning routine used to be snooze button times 10 and then hit the coffee machine and get out the door always running late. And by creating something a little bit more meaningful and intentional, my days have become more meaningful and intentional. So I think if we can start our days with even 5 minutes of time doing something that we enjoy, whether it be reading or meditating or even stretching out on a yoga mat, we can move through the chaos of our day with a little less craziness and confusion.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that every person in this room can relate to, the craziness and certainly the snooze button, right? So, you know, love to hear from you all perspectives, especially writing about parenting, being a mother, what that's like. Lauren, we've heard that it takes a village to raise a child. How can working moms lean on their partners, family, and support system to help share the workload?
I wish it were as simple as just saying, ask for help. But the truth is, you know, I mean, even look at just the title of this panel, you know, it's time-saving tips for women. Well, it's not really asking for help. It's really enlisting partnership that should have been there that isn't, and that we are now, as women, charged with correcting. So in addition to having the mental load that we all talk about and more, you know, more to do in our days, there was actually a study from the Gottman Institute, which studies relationships, that after you have a baby, you have 300 new tasks built into every single day. But in addition to that, now we're also responsible for correcting that by asking for help. And yet, what do? You have to. But you have to really see it as enlisting a partner, not, you know, leaning on someone. No, you're really balancing things by making someone your equal and helping them, in helping you, whether that is your partner at home, whether that is your work wife at work or your work husband at work or your supervisor even, and asking for the changes and the flexibility you need to be a good employee and the person you want to be in your personal life as well.
I think in the morning, especially for those of us with kids that we also have to get out of the house, it can feel like this huge burden, like it's not just you, right? You have to get these kids somewhere way earlier than anybody wants to be anywhere, and they need to have all their stuff with them. And it's just this big thing. And one of the things that it doesn't get you more time, but it changes how you feel about the time, is to ask yourself, what is the real goal in the morning? And I think a lot of us feel like the goal is to get everybody out of the house on time. When I shifted to feeling like the goal was to have a pleasanter morning and to help the others in my household have a pleasanter morning, that changed that hour in a way that gave some of it back to us as family time. So in that case, I don't feel like you can't really speed up your family routine. And you can't, unfortunately, get an extra hour. You know, please start school later. But that isn't going to happen. But to feel differently about it can mean a lot.
So actually, if you're okay elaborating on that a little bit, I'd love to ask, what was that shift that you made? What changed for you to be able to get into that mindset?
Some of it was just who was responsible for getting all these people out the door on time, right? And you know, when your kids are little, to some extent, it's you. But the older they get, the more this is a great place for them to take this on for themselves. Because really, there's nothing big at stake. Their entire morning can implode into they can forget everything. And it just doesn't matter. It's a learning lesson. They get to try it again tomorrow. So letting go of feeling like it was on me if they had their homework or their shoes or whatever was great. And also letting go of the idea that it had to be on me whether they were learning those lessons. I mean, my idea about mornings is that we are a team of people that all need to be in the same vehicle at the same time. And so if you, I'm not going to step over a forgotten lunch on the theory that my kid needs to remember their own lunch. No, here's your lunch. We're just, you know, we're sort of all trying to achieve the same thing. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the kids are any more pleasant in the morning, although it's just easier because then I'm not like sort of responding to them.
Right, and Lauren, I think that ties really nicely into what you were just saying about really calling on all the people in your life, including the kids, when they're old enough to
take
a part.
Absolutely, and that's a shift that, at least in our house, happened around age 3, which was really helpful. It was interesting that Courtney mentioned the 5 minutes, sort of the moment that she takes in the morning, because the research that I did, which was I surveyed and interviewed about 800 new parents to talk to them about this transition to work, or transition back to work after baby, because my own experience, while really hard, was also one of admitted privilege, and I wanted to see what it was like for single moms, for adoptive moms, for moms who, you know, work hour to hour in hourly wage working jobs, all kinds of moms. And one of the many statistics that came out of it, and I had no idea that I was a data nerd. Like, I'm an editor and writer by nature, but actually I spent 3 days just looking at numbers, and it was fascinating and cool, was that this is, like, it's kind of sad sounding, but I don't mean for it to be, but there was that women spend a lot more time getting ready in the morning because they're also getting their babies ready to get out the door. However, they spend less time on themselves, but then they have 6 minutes, exactly 6 minutes, to spend just enjoying their baby. And, you know, I think that sounds sad, but actually, if you can capture that little bit of time that you have, and you can kind of find ways to streamline the getting ready of you, at least, that can be really helpful. So one thing, and, you know, this sounds like such a, like, tippy tip, but if you can organize your closet in a way that it works for you rather than you working for your closet, and take at even whether you have a new baby or you have changed sizes recently or you've changed jobs and there's a different expectation of what you should wear, make a miniature closet within your closet. So just siphon off the things that are appropriate for you right now and that fit and you feel good. That may be 6 items of clothing, but you only every morning choose your outfit, or if you're better than I am, you choose it the night before, from that little closet. And if you look at that little closet within your closet and you see that you don't have a single pair of black pants, well, then that's what you know you need to go buy, is a pair of black pants. But it just simplifies things in a way that doesn't let you start your day feeling bad about yourself. You feel in control, and so often the things we do for ourselves and self-care is not just about feeling good from the massage, which I don't get very often, but, you know, it's about knowing you're the kind of person who could take the time to do that for yourself.
Right, and setting yourself up for success. Like, whatever advantage you can give yourself going into the day,
exactly.
Give yourself that advantage.
It's the make your bed theory.
That. Yeah, and Courtney, I know in Project 333, that's something that's the minimalist fashion challenge. So that's something that you really advocate as well.
Yes, I'm so glad you brought up closets, because I think we're wasting so much time making decisions before we ever get out of our closet in the morning. And by the afternoon, we're completely decision fatigued. And I do believe it starts in the closet. So to take that, you know, small closet to another level, this challenge invites you to dress with 33 items or less for 3 months, including clothing, jewelry, accessories, and shoes. I know. But what happens, first of all, I think what you'll notice, whether you're doing a full-on fashion challenge or creating this smaller closet within the closet, is that you were only wearing those items anyway. So you're probably already doing this, but you still have to sort through the clothes that don't fit, your poor purchase decisions, items that might make you sad or feel guilty. Why put yourself through that? Instead, just remove those items, hide them for 3 months, and see how you feel. And if you feel better, then it'll be easier to let those items go.
Love it. KJ, I am very excited to hear your thoughts on this one. How can parents think about our lives differently so that the activities we love and embrace don't feel harried and burdensome?
So much of how we spend our time has to do with how our kids are spending their time, right? They're, you know, we're picking them up, we're driving them to the next thing, we're grabbing them from something, we're getting them, you know, whatever. We arrange our schedules around our kids, and to some extent, we have to, right? Nobody, I mean, We don't actually have a school bus where I am, so there's somebody's got to be there to pick up if it's me, if it's the babysitter. It's not really optional. But one of the things that we can do is really, like, think about that time as time we actually want to spend with our kids. So a huge transition for me was going from I have to drive you to such and such to I want to drive you to such and such. Because for a lot of it, I mean, so, you know, soccer practice, Saturday morning. You could pay somebody else to drive your kid to soccer practice. Or if you don't have the, I know, but if you don't have the resources to pay someone, you could trade with another parent, and you could drive 1 week, and they could drive 1 week. Or you could say to your kid, you know, we're not doing soccer this season. Like, you've got options. It's not really a have to. So to look at that as actually, I've made a decision that my kid's going to play soccer because they want to, and I'm on board with it, and I'm going to do the driving because I think it's silly to pay someone else or because I just wouldn't. You know, this is a choice. This is the way I want to spend my time. And given that I have this kid and that the kid loves soccer, there's really nowhere I'd rather be. That seems weird, like as you're driving down the street, but it's probably true. Like you're in the car with this person that you love and you have this opportunity to talk. It doesn't have to be like a woo-woo gratitude thing. It's more just recognizing, you know, there are choices that I made that put me in this car seat, and they're good choices, and I'm happy about them. So, you know, I can be happy about the result. I don't think that saves anybody any time. It's just thinking about it differently.
I think it changes the way we move throughout the world, and it changes the way we interact with people, and it changes our stress levels. And I love that you did point out that a lot of that is a choice, that busyness a lot of times is a choice that we're making. So whether it's about, you know, our kids, our children's activities, or, you know, those of us out there who don't have kids, we are often opting into things, and we're adopting the mindset of I have to. But really, if we were to step back and take a look, we are choosing.
Yeah, well, you're either choosing yourself how to spend your time, or you're responding to other people's choices.
Totally.
You know, and if you're making the choices yourself, I think you can feel so much better about them.
Yeah, it's very empowering. Yes. Let's see. Courtney, you mentioned decision fatigue, so I'd love to talk about that. You say decision fatigue often contributes to feeling overwhelmed with busyness. What are a few ways we can reduce some of the decisions we make every day?
Yeah, well, while we're talking about how busy we are all day long, that makes us feel busier. And then making all of these different decisions, we are truly worn out, I mean, from the inside out. And so our busyness feels crushing at that point instead of perhaps the busyness high that we might have been on earlier in the day. So if we can eliminate some decisions or streamline some of the less meaningful decisions that we have to make, I mean, whether that be eating similar meals during the week, which some people find that boring, I think it's a relief not to have to ask that question, like, what's for dinner? Like, the same thing we had last night, that's what's for dinner tonight. Everyone's gonna survive that. And if they get used to it, if you get used to it as a family, I think it really relieves a lot of stress. And it's such a simple thing. So streamlining meals, streamlining wardrobe, as we talked about earlier, any of those kind of micro decisions that you make that you can simplify will let you save your decision-making powers for more meaningful decisions.
Well, and it's so much faster if you've already decided. I mean, if you get home at 5 and you don't know what's for dinner, you're sunk. Like, assuming that you need to provide dinner for yourself and others, which that's my role in our family. So, you know, if I walk in the door and it's 5 o'clock and everybody is hungry and I haven't even thought about it, it's gonna take me forever. It's not gonna be good. Everybody's gonna be peeved.
If it's just for yourself, if it's 5 o'clock and I haven't decided, I'm ordering takeout.
Yeah.
That's that.
Those are the nights I eat cereal.
Yeah. And some nights cereal is a fantastic dinner for everyone.
There's an overachieving, I think, that a lot of us feel that we have to do in order to be good mothers and good workers. And we are, you know, for better and for worse, it's the first generation of American mothers who have been told that they can be everything they want to be, and yet there's still a lot of cultural factors working against that, just to put it mildly. And so, you know, particularly, I think it really does start for a lot of women when they are home on parental leave with their babies, particularly if their partner is not with them. They feel this need to be the one who learns everything to the degree that they would perform at work and see the baby as a job. And then when you go back to work at the end of that, if your partner has not had equivalent leave or not been able to take it, not only does that sort of exacerbate the pay gap, but you guys both go back, and at the end of the day, you come home, and guess who knows how to do everything? Once it's done really well and has just spent 18 hours a day parenting and thinking that that's the new normal, that you should be able to, you know, craft the, you know, individually calligraphied whatever baby announcements. And so you go back to work, you no longer have those hours, and yet you think that's your new standard of parenting. And it can really bite you in the butt unless you enlist that partnership. And then I gave a talk at a law firm, and I love when I get to talk to audiences of new moms, because my kids are 10 and 7, and so I can hear what they're going through. And this one awesome lawyer said to me, she came out of the Obama administration, like, so much smarter than I am. And she said, well, you know what I did before I went back to work? I just made a list of all the stuff that has to happen in our house in order for us to have the family life that we envisioned. And I had my husband sit and make it with me. And we both wrote down everything we were going to write down. And I was writing a lot longer than he was. And then we combined our lists, and we crossed off things that repeated each other. And then we actually started crossing off some items of each other's lists. You know, not things like mental load stuff, remembering the birthdays, buying birthday presents for kids' friends, whatever. There were some things that they each found the other was doing because he or she felt obligated to do it to be a good parent, and the other person kind of let them off the hook and said, you know what, this list is miles long, we can't do it all, scratch that out, it's okay, we're just going to make a little pact as a team. And I really love that.
I feel like our biggest time-saving tip here is you don't have to do all the things.
Take a nap.
Yes, you do. Thank you. Maybe, I mean, when I talk... Like, I often tell people that I do meal planning. So on Sunday, I know exactly what we're eating every night that week, and that's what works for me, and the kids can look at. But it's not like I'm planning for us to have chicken cordon bleu. I'm planning for me to put a bag of frozen meatballs and a jar of sauce in the slow cooker in the morning, put the lid on, and plug it in. That would be planning. So,
isn't that so freeing to know that, like,
yeah,
it's
amazing what can count if you decide that it does.
That's a good meal.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Even and self-care is the same way. You know, I think we all feel this absence of time to take care of ourselves, especially now that that's such a, like, hashtag trendy term. Well, you know, so the women I surveyed said on average they spent in the 3 months when they were first going back to work, they spent less than 1 hour per week doing something for themselves, which is really, honestly, devastating to your mental health at a time when hormonally you're not really yourself yet. And so it's really, for the women who were happier, it was really about reframing it and realizing that it can count as me time if you're taking your baby on a stroll to go run some errands to pick up some diapers, but the sun's on your face, your hair feels warm, your baby's taking a lovely nap, like, you're enjoy that moment. And I'm not like a spiritual woo-woo person at all, but that really... It's really true. If you can see that as something you're doing for yourself, too, and not just in service of the people around you, that helps you reclaim that time, too.
Babies make everything so hard.
So hard.
But God, then it's so worth it.
Yeah,
because then they grow up and go to college.
There we go.
Lauren, I want to step back when you kind of talked about doing double duty. So what are some good tips for those transitional moments in your day when working moms find themselves doing double duty?
Sure. Okay, so the women I surveyed told me that on average they found their commutes to be 50% more stressful after having a baby. And I think some of that is to do with, like, your tolerance level of being on the New York subway underneath somebody's sweaty armpit while you're hauling breast milk home and trying to, like, get the baby in time from daycare not to be charged a dollar a minute for being late. That's a huge part of it. But I think another part of it is that you feel very in between. You're not doing your work stuff. You're not doing your home stuff. So what seemed to work the best for the women I talked to was either to give that commute time to their work. So if there are some emails you can stack up to reply to later in the day when you're, you know, commuting, if you're assuming that you're not actually driving, or switch off with someone, you know, someone who lives close by so you can carpool and do that, or schedule a conference call or whatever it is that your mode of transportation allows you to do, fantastic. If not, use it for self-care. And like, and you can actually take care of yourself well under someone's sweaty armpit, because I've done it. The quickest way to feel better fast and to release all of the hormones in your brain and the chemicals in your brain that make you feel better fast is to soothe one of your senses. So I'm the lady who's sitting up here telling you to eat a piece of chocolate. If that's what soothes one of your senses, or like a nice smelling lotion, great. For me, it's the opening jingle of the daily. That's, you know, I hear that music and I'm like, oh, this is something I'm doing for myself. So if you can use your commute to take care of yourself, that's a great transition tip. It also lets you sort of decompress. If you work from home and you don't have a commute, build one in for yourself. Even if it's just a walk around the block, a walk to the mailbox, whatever it is, before you transition from work to home. And yes, like there will be emails answered at night or whatever, but it helps. And then for mornings, the closet tip is a good one in terms of just self, like taking care of yourself. If you care about anything about your appearance, make it your skin and your hair. It just because those are the easiest ways to feel better about yourself quickly, according to the research. I'm not just saying that because I'm like an old glamour editor. Like it actually, you know, if you feel good about your skin and you feel good about your hair, you will feel good about everything else and you'll need less time to apply makeup. And so just drink a lot of water, wash your face at night, moisturize, SPF.
You'll and your hair is totally not one of the 33 things.
That's true.
Well, while we're talking about things that moms can do, let's talk a little bit about how parents can feel less stressed, KJ, about the demands on our kids when it comes to things like homework and getting to school and activities on time.
How to feel less stressed. Try to feel less stressed. Decide to feel less stressed.
Oh, okay, it's that easy.
It's that easy. Snap. Snap. No, so I think one of the big things that parents can do is release the idea that we have any control over our kids' outcomes. And that is so super frustrating. I would really, really love it if I could just, you know, order up a delightful future for each of my children and just let me put that in the box right now and make it happen. And we can't. So one of the things that we think, I think, when we're looking at the fall, and we're going, well, what things should my kid participate in, or what should my teenager be doing to sort of get themselves ready for the next step in life? And we really think it needs to be a lot, because if we're not actually doing something and if our kids aren't actually doing something at every single moment, it's possible that they are not developing and improving and achieving in ways that will lead them to greater success, and somebody else is going to get the cookie or the college, realistically. And so this is actually so hard. This is advice that I struggle to follow. But if you can release the idea that you have very much control over those outcomes at all, you can also release that feeling that if Bobby does not start soccer at 4, he will not be able to play on the club team at 7, and he will not go on to the varsity team in high school, and he will not get the college scholarship. He's not getting it anyway. Sorry. I can count the people in this room. No one's kid's getting an academic, you're not getting an academic scholarship. No one's getting an athletic scholarship. There aren't very many. So there's that. And then there's that other, you know, it's fourth grade math. And if they don't get into the honors math program, they can't do the fifth grade honors class. And if they can't do the fifth grade honors class, that means they don't do pre-algebra at the right time. And then they don't do algebra at the right time. And then they don't get to finish calculus. And right, here we are at the college problem again. We need to release our dependence, our feelings about this outcomes, and try really hard to just do the things that we're doing now that are working for us, and trust that our kids are working towards their own outcomes and the world is working towards outcomes, and the best we can really do is just not do everything we can right now, but honestly, the best we can do is to enjoy what we are doing right now.
So can you reset the outcome? Is it that you just want an outcome today that's good, that's a happy kid going to bed well? Or is it like you look at a week at a time? Because this was something I found with, I don't believe in balance and in, you know, looking at any week or day, it's sort of the opposite of this. Any week or day, you're going to be unbalanced. Like, I am doing work today. I am here. I am not at my kid's chess tournament, and I'm not at my other kid's picking him up from flag football. Like, all totally good with them and good with me. But today, I'm balanced toward work. But if I look at, I like to look at it in like 3 or 6 month chunks, then I can see if I'm balanced. And I wonder, is it sort of, do you take the opposite approach with outcome? Can you look at like, well, this hour, we're good. The outcome of this day was great. Is that measurable? Because I don't know that I can give up on like thinking that my job is to care about how my kid turns out. Do you know what I mean?
Well, but I think you need to think about what is it that you care about? How your kid turns out.
Yeah.
Are you hoping that they turn out to be an empathetic person? Are you hoping that they turn out to be somebody who can, you know, get themselves out the door in the morning to whatever job that they have? Or are you hoping that they go to Harvard? Those are often really completely and totally different things. I keep wanting to sort of bring us back to time. And I'm not quite sure how to bring that one back to time saving. Sorry, lost that one.
So
good.
This might not tie it back to time, but I was thinking about how you are talking about the outcome and the things that you do now are based on that. But I think also we get caught up in competing on behalf, or at least through our kids.
Yeah.
So we're competing ourselves in our workplace or our neighborhoods, but then we're competing through our kids too, because if our kids do great, then we look like amazing people. And so we want to be the best at that, but we're putting them into these activities and through these things to create a resume for a position they may never even want. And to what end? Because all of that competing and ladder climbing and carrot chasing, I can speak from personal experience that there's nothing there. So that if that's the outcome, then for sure reassess.
Yeah, I just wish we could look around at everybody's got a brother or a cousin or a friend who, you know, they didn't get to college right away. It took them some time to figure out what they wanted to do. Or, you know, they drove a bus in Vail for 9 years and then they started a company. Or they both drove a bus in Vail for 9 years and they're still driving a bus in Vail. But they're totally, like, they're good with that. And the thing is that we look around at that in our peers and in ourselves. I don't think anyone up here had a sort of career trajectory, mm-hmm. and yet that's what we feel like. If we just worry that if our kids don't look like they're on that that they're not going to get anywhere. I think it's just because we're scared.
I think it's also like there is beauty and joy and value in just letting our children and ourselves enjoy where we are right now. So I have the perspective of having older kids. Mine are 20 and 18. But, you know, when my older daughter was 5 years old, she was obsessed with trucks. And, of course, you know, then the narrative you tell yourself is, oh, she's going to be a transportation planner or a truck driver. She'll design these Hess trucks, you know, that we have under the tree this year. And, you know, she's in art school for dramatic writing. So she's not doing anything related to that. But, you know, giving our kids the space and giving ourselves the space that, you know, if we are interested in DIY crafts, we don't have to run out and launch a business and get an Etsy store and attend craft fairs and do all this stuff. There's beauty and joy and value in just, like, liking something. It's okay to just like it, to not make it your lifelong pursuit and vision.
There was a great piece in the Times this last week called the Joy of Mediocrity. It was like, you know, because we all feel like our hobby should be really fantastic at it, and if you don't put a bazillion hours into your hobby, then you don't really love it, and you shouldn't even bother.
There's a myth of the side gig, like that you're not going to have a satisfied life if you don't also have a side gig, like something you do on the side that's a passion project, but that also happens to be trademarked and give you income. And no, like it might just be a hobby. If you have time for a hobby, like you're winning.
I can't monetize naps in Netflix. If I could, it would be a different story, but that's what I would like my side gig to be next time. So actually, I want to go back to some tips and what we can really help people walk out today. Courtney, you say saying no is a big part of reducing busyness, but how do we say no when we are used to always saying yes?
Yeah, how many of us say yes when our heart says no? Like our heart is screaming, say no, and yes just comes out of our mouth, right? Because it's just a habit almost. We want to please everyone. We want everyone to think that we're nice, whatever the reason is. But in saying yes all the time, we forget what we really want. We don't have time to think about what we want anymore. And so we have to take back the no. And there are a million different ways to say it. I think no thank you is a perfect way. I don't think you have to say no, and here are 12 reasons why. I think you can just say no, thank you. People are often reminding us how busy we are by when they say, hey, I know you're so busy, but can you do all of these things for me before you do your things? And the answer is no, I'm really not interested. I don't think it's an apology situation. And I often remind people that I don't say no because I'm so busy. I say no because I don't want to be so busy. I want to have time for what matters to me. And unfortunately, we can't all benefit from my yes today.
A great way I think about it is, would you want to do it right now?
I love that. That's where I got it from. I've been using that. I think I got it from your tiny letter.
Would you want to do it like right this minute? Would you, if I was asking you to do this in an hour or, you know, tomorrow, if that's more, would you want to? Okay, 3 months from now, you're still not going to want to.
It's true. Yeah.
There's also, but I think what's the sort of the flip of that in a really good way is that actually your yeses become much more meaningful, which is something that I like to tell new moms in the workplace. You know, we like to say, okay, what are our strengths now? We're more efficient because we have to leave like at 5:59 on the dot every day, when really actually you're more efficient because what's been shown is that your transition time between tasks is shorter because the baby trained you to do that. Like, you know, you're able to smush things. You don't have to transition. You just go from one thing to the next, and it does compress your day. But the other thing I like to say is that women like to say, well, I'm better at saying no. And they are better at saying no, but they also have to remember that they're better when they say yes, it means more, because you've done the mental math about what am I going to have to compromise, what am I going to have to steal time from. So if you agree to meet a friend out for a drink or go for a promotion or anything in between those two things, you've said yes with real purpose, and that's a great thing to know about yourself too.
I think the people in our lives appreciate it, they feel it, they can sense it. You know, I know when someone is with me because they genuinely want to be with me versus when they have to be with me.
Yeah.
You know, there's a difference in the interaction and the quality of the relationship, so I think that that's really important, for sure. So this is something, I want to talk about working mothers, but I think that there's space in here for people who don't have kids as well, and mm-hmm. it's around negotiating flexibility. Mm-hmm. So what are some tips for moms-to-be, women who aren't moms, to have conversations about flexibility in the workplace with their managers?
So I do like to say exactly that, that flexibility should be for everyone, because actually our brains all work differently, and we are all most successful, most productive, and most creative in our work when we're allowed flexibility, and it really, we need to sort of de-uterus the situation. So, you know, having a big pregnant belly in front of you is the most visible workplace difference you may have or you may experience and that you see around you, but everybody has something in his or her personal life that they need flexibility
totally.
For. So that's the approach that I take when I'm giving advice to corporations. In terms of asking for it, you kind of, again, you have to think of it as not something you're asking for. What you're doing is you're presenting a plan that is mutually beneficial. So here is what I can see working. Here is how I will still get my job done as suits my job description and probably will even go beyond because I usually do. And here is how this is actually beneficial to you, Fred, sitting across the table from me, or you, larger company who wants to retain women, recruit more effectively, have a better reputation, and compete with that other company over there that has better policies. Do a little bit of research. Come in with a very simple plan. There's one woman who told me, I can't believe it. Like, I took all the advice in your book and I didn't get what I wanted. And I've heard a lot of people who did get what they wanted. And I said, well, tell me what you did. And she said, well, I presented this. And she pulled out 5 single space pages of her plan. I was like, okay. So she made that look really hard. You want to make it look really simple. And then the other thing you can do, a lot of managers, and I've been a manager in this position, feel like, oh, if I grant that person that flexibility, then, oh, it's going to be a domino. Everybody's going to want it. And what you can do is say, let's try this for this set amount of time. And that allows you to be able to renegotiate in a few months. It allows them to know they're not signing in blood. And if you have a small baby in particular, their needs and schedule do change. And you might have new and different needs. And it also turns it into less of a, like, I had this big meeting, and more of a, like, oh, we have a relationship where we talk about how this is all going to work pretty much on a regular basis. All that's good stuff.
Absolutely. Well, great. So we are wrapping it up here in a minute. I wanted to throw it out to the crowd and see, does anyone have any questions today that they'd like to ask to our panel?
Great. Can you come up to the mic so we can hear you?
Thank you so much. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
I'm pretty loud without the mic anyway. But I'm a single mother, so I'm constantly juggling schedule between myself and my son, who will be 7 in December. And recently, I've just been feeling an incredible amount of guilt because my schedule seems to be a little bit more heavier than his at this point in time. Mm-hmm. So just to give you like a quick background, I work 40 hours plus at my full-time job, but I'm also a college coach, basketball coach. So during November to February, I am like, you know, just stuck in my schedule, right?
Night times too, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And then I also do some personal training as well. So a lot of those are income driven because it's just one income in the house, but I feel so guilty, you know, with just trying to do what I feel is best for him and then again, do what I feel is best for him, but it's more my time. So my question is, do you have any advice on kind of like maybe decreasing the guilt or even how to just kind of balance maybe his schedule and mine? I don't know.
So he must be so proud of you.
I hope so.
Well, and if he's not now, think of the story he's going to tell later. Like, well, when I was growing up, I mean, my mom, she worked full time and she was coaching college basketball. I mean, that's cool. So, you know, you are giving to him just by being who you are and the example that you are to him. Also, I really suggest you don't think about like every day, like, okay, oh my God, I only got 45 minutes of kid, you know, we only spent 45 minutes together today, but, you know, look at your whole week or your whole month or your whole year, because your kid, while they might seem like they're looking at every day, sort of on that day-to-day basis, when they think about their childhood or when they think about their year, they really think about the time you did spend together. Most of them don't think about, you know, the things that you didn't do. It's what you do that gets remembered. And I guess you're actually the second person today to bring up the guilt question. Mm-hmm. And I think that something we need to do is just to learn, not to expect that to go away, but to learn that it's a piece of our feelings. To learn to just be with it. Okay, on the days that I don't see my son before bedtime, I'm going to feel kind of bad about that. There are lots of days when I do. So on the days when you do, be sure to feel good. But when you feel bad, just accept it. Like, okay, that's sit with it. Like, know that that's a feeling that we all share, that, you know, we wish we could give everything to our kids, but you don't actually want to raise a kid that you gave everything to. that's not really what you want from them. You want them to learn that you do great things and they do great things and it doesn't all have to be together. So I hope that's helpful.
Very
for
helpful.
Me.
Thank
and
you.
I would just add to really identify what that feeling is, because oftentimes it's not guilt. I mean, guilt sort of suggests that you're doing something
that's
wrong.
True. Totally,
which
yes.
you're not doing anything wrong. So if it's sadness or you're angry about something, whatever it is, really identify what that is. I find it really helpful to put it on paper, to write it down. I feel like it can take it from here and put it here and see it for what it really is. And oftentimes it's not as bad as what I've got spinning through my mind once I write it down.
It is also a tick of new motherhood that everyone says they feel guilty. I transcribed all the interviews that I did for my book, and if you did a word cloud, guilt is every single person mentioned guilt, and yet this is hundreds of women who have very different jobs, very different approaches to motherhood, and yet it was this, you know, thing everybody said.
We can't be all getting it wrong.
No, so exactly, that's exactly it. So there were some people who said they felt guilty for leaving their baby in the care of someone who did not love him as much as they did. Understandable. Mm-hmm. There were some people who felt guilty for loving being at work and enjoying it. And if it is truly a common denominator that we all say we feel guilty, like, what's the basic math lesson? Like, just eliminate the common denominator. And I like to say the same thing. Call the feeling what it is and treat for that. And if it does make you sad, truly sad, then perhaps it is something that, you know, you could or should change. But we all feel it, so it's not a particularly feminist feeling, you know? And you don't hear very many people talk about daddy guilt, but I would welcome that conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we just have a couple of seconds left
Thank
for
you.
Another question. Thank you so much for asking that one.
So yeah, come on up. We just have a couple of minutes before we have to wrap. No, that's great.
Thank you all so much for being here. My question involves managing my team and my time relative to my team. I manage a team of 5 women, and there must have been something in the water, but we've all had babies, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And our department is overseen by a male, who is struggling and has a more traditional sense of the workplace, and he's struggling with the flexibility conversation. And I, as a leader, want to offer that flexibility because I certainly have the perspective as a new mother that it is necessary, and it's also going to motivate my team to be mindful of their time while they're here so that they can get home to their person. But I'm wondering if you have any ideas about how to have a conversation with someone overseeing our department and how to help them think through how they can still get the productivity that they want to see out of us while also giving us the flexibility that we need as mothers.
So I would do those mothers the courtesy of giving them measurable deliverables, ways to show that in the 4-day week or the day that has a time when they leave for lunch to go nurse their baby or take somebody to preschool or whatever, that they're still getting their work done, and really, really celebrate those successes because also encourage them to be very transparent about the time they're taking. And in terms of having conversation with that manager, this is the future. This is the future of work.
Right.
You know, we now work with technology that allows us to be accessible 24 hours a day, and many of us are. And if that manager expects, you know, anyone on his team or your team to be answering emails at 10 o'clock in the morning, he also needs to know they might be ordering, you know, groceries online at 10 o'clock at night, at 10 o'clock in the morning as well. And I think I would really look to the numbers. There's a lot of research that shows that flexibility actually increases productivity, increases longevity of people staying at the company. Look at whoever you're, I don't know what kind of business you're in, but whatever your competitors are, and see what their attrition rates are for women, and see what yours are, and see how your policies and your culture may compare and contrast. And really genuinely, the thing that convinces managers the most is numbers and money. So if you can find anything that just makes those points in a way where that guy can take it to his boss, because he probably has one too, yeah, arm him with that information.
Great. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for your question. Well, we have reached the end of our time together today. I just want to thank Courtney, KJ, and Lauren for joining us today and bringing all of their wisdom and experience up here. They will be signing copies of their books in the exhibit hall immediately following the event. So go out, meet them, buy their book, check it out. And thanks, everyone, for coming today. We really appreciate it.